Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Monday, it's the CBS original comedy, The Neighborhood.
I need at least a month to prepare for a debate, not 6 hours.
Actually, it's 4 hours.
Now my watch is broken, too.
With Cedric the Entertainer, Max Greenfield, and guest star Wayne Brady.
You gotta fund the schools or graduate fools.
I stole all my lines.
Look, don't worry, I got a plan.
Okay, well, what is it?
Okay, so I don't have a plan.
A new episode of The Neighborhood.
You're gonna have to give them a show.
Monday, 8, 7 central on CBS.
Good morning, Carolina. As you're listening to Carolina Focus on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, the 102.5 610 Sports Radio, WFNZ. We are Intercom Charlotte. It's also available, Carolina Focus is, as a podcast on WBT.com. We're your co-hosts, Sharon Forsland. I'm Ed Billick. And let's get started with this Thanksgiving week show. Thursday is Thanksgiving. It's the traditional time also for holiday shopping. Well, we got the coronavirus, the pandemic going on. Sharon found two experts that will help us through, we call it the COVID holidays. Take it away, Sharon.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us today here on Carolina Focus. Well, the holidays are upon us, Thanksgiving right around the corner, and that, of course, means shopping. Well, things no doubt going to look a little different this year, though, because of the coronavirus pandemic. And we have got a very special guest here to help you navigate the shopping world as we head into the holidays. Trey Baj is a lifestyle expert. She specializes in smart shopping and retail. Trey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I know that holiday shopping is going to clearly look a lot different than how it normally does. What kind of changes can we expect?
Yeah, so the two biggest changes, obviously there will be so many, but the two biggest ones that I think that people are going to be shopping online more than ever, and that travel is going to look a lot different. And the best way to adjust to both is to start planning ahead, especially because with shopping, I do anticipate some shipping delays. And then also with travel, people are going to be staying in hotels more than usual, where you might typically stay with your family. You might opt to stay in a hotel for safety reasons.
All right. Well, what can you start with let's start with Black Friday. That's coming up here first. Are we going to have a Black Friday like we've had in the past where people swarm the shopping malls, or is this going to be more of a spaced out thing? What are retailers doing differently?
That's a great question. And so Black Friday is going to look a lot different this year. As I said, I think people are going to be shopping online more than ever. Black Friday is typically an in-store day, but in years prior, it's been building online as well. And so this will be the biggest online shopping day for Black Friday. But on the other hand, retailers are going to be doing a lot to help consumers feel safe in their stores. Be prepared to wear a mask, be prepared to perhaps stand in line as shoppers are spaced out a bit. But we are not going to see that rush to the door. We're not going to be fighting over flat screen TVs. Everything is going to be safer, more spread out. We're going to see things like contact-free checkout or checking out with a sales associate just anywhere in the store rather than standing in line. But then the deals that are available in store on Black Friday will also be available online. So you can shop in whatever way you feel most comfortable.
Okay. So you don't have to worry about getting up and shopping at 4 a.m. If you can do it actually online, then you'll have it go both ways.
That's right. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of deals are there out there? I know every year there's some big special. What are some of the big deals this year that people can be on the lookout for?
So we're going to see so many deals that it could be a bit dizzying. So here are the main categories that I would focus on that will be the most deeply discounted on Black Friday. Electronics, so your laptops, tablets, TVs, that category is always really strong on Black Friday. Also beauty, and then also apparel. So those are the three big categories for Black Friday. But if we're talking before Black Friday, retailers are offering a lot of sales right now. So you can really take advantage of sales sort of at your leisure. It will heat up around Black Friday, but lots of great deals now. And then also don't forget about discounts that may be available to you through memberships you're already paying for, like for instance, AARP. If you are a member of AARP, you can save on a lot of great holiday gifts simply by being a member. So for example, if there are family members who you're not seeing during the holiday shopping season, but want to give them something fabulous, you can send them a bouquet of flowers from 1-800-Flowers and save 20% or $20, depending on your purchase. Wow. Or genealogy gifts are always really popular, and Ancestry is one of the most well-known. AARP members get to save 30% off of select kits. And so while the retailers will be offering lots of great discounts, you can also find discounts in other places, like those memberships you're already paying for.
Wow, I didn't realize that. Those are some pretty deep discounts right there. When you talk about the gift shopping and doing things online, or if you want to do it in store, I know a lot of stores, you know, for months now have been offering a curbside pickup. Is that something that you see will continue through the holiday season?
Yes, for sure. And retailers who didn't offer it will during this season. And even your smaller retailers. I mean, I love to shop at big box stores, but I also think it's important to note that we should support our smaller businesses, our local economy, and your small favorite boutique that you love to shop at downtown will have safety measures in place as well. They're probably already up to speed with curbside delivery, and you may not even be aware of it yet. So if you do plan to shop with your favorite shops like that, give them a call, see what they're offering. Are they timing visits? Are they doing curbside pickup? Are they doing special gift wrapping and delivery? So definitely check them out and see what they're offering, because you'll probably be surprised by how together they have it during this holiday shopping season, because they are, of course, competing with the big boys.
Absolutely. Well, earlier you mentioned holiday travel. What do you see that looking like, and what kind of tips can you give people who are going to be traveling through the holiday season?
Right. So I do expect air travel to be down quite a bit, and people are going to be driving a lot more. And so thankfully, gas prices are down again today. So that's great to see. If you don't have a car, you can rent a car. If AARP membership qualifies you for up to 30% off Avis, rent a car, and also potentially upgrading, you can add an extra driver at no cost. Wyndham Hotel and Resorts, they're offering 10% off their lowest rate for AARP members. And also they're doing something special, which I think is notable. They have something called Count on Us protocols to ensure that they have enhanced cleaning protocols. Okay. So that is really important to know if you're staying in hotel, to know that they're keeping that place safe and clean for us, so we can feel more comfortable when we're staying there during the pandemic.
For people that are not able to travel or don't feel safe to do so, what tips do you have for them to stay in touch with their family members over the holidays? And what are some of the gifts? You mentioned a few of them already that people could send instead.
Yeah, so I think flowers, genealogy kits, digital gifts like subscription boxes, I think, are fantastic. Food gifts, I think, will be very popular. And then Consumer Cellular is a great company to check out if you have a relative who maybe doesn't have a smartphone yet and you're trying to have better contact with them during the pandemic. They have benefits for AARP members, and they have no contract plans that are geared towards people who are 50 plus. So many great benefits to take advantage of. And obviously now more than ever, it's easier to stay in touch with people, even if we can't see them in person.
One more thing with the online shipping, with so many people probably doing their shopping online, is this something that we're going to be able to expect, I'm assuming, shipping delays? What advice do you have for people who are going to be shopping online to make sure things get there on time?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I do suggest that people start getting their shopping done sooner rather than later. Right now, you have plenty of time, nothing to worry about. I think through Black Friday and Cyber Monday, you'll be fine. December, you're definitely going to be taking some chances there. So if you're a last minute shopper, be smart about what you buy. Maybe think about buying a digital gift card or something like that, or a subscription box, something that doesn't need to be physically delivered somewhere. So you want to ensure that your gifts are going to arrive on time. And I do expect some delays. I hope I'm wrong, but I would suggest to consumers, since we're talking about it this early in the season, to start get started so you don't have to worry about those shipping delays.
Absolutely. So as we head into the holiday season here with travel and shopping, what's the number one piece of advice you have for our listeners?
Make a list. Get organized, recipients, budget for each, take a look at your finances. Have your finances changed from last year? Maybe you need to spend a little bit less, or maybe you need to propose drawing names instead of buying for your entire family. Gift ideas on that list as well. And so that way, when you see a great sale or a great membership benefit, you can tick that person off your list and stay on budget. Try not to bring any debt into 2021 is the goal.
Excellent. Excellent advice. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, Trey Bosch. She is a lifestyle expert who specializes in smart shopping and retail and travel and has given us all sorts of excellent tips and advice today as we enter into the holiday shopping and travel season. Thank you so much for joining us today, Trey. Well, we're going to switch gears now, going from talking about holiday shopping to holiday gatherings. Can you do it safely? Many people are wondering, is it possible to get together with family and friends during this pandemic? Should you visit relatives or have family and friends over for Thanksgiving or Christmas or other celebrations this holiday season? It's definitely not going to be easy this year with this coronavirus pandemic. Your typical holiday gathering is definitely going to look different this year. In fact, the CDC has recently come out and recommended that you should not have family gatherings except with people who live under your own roof. Now, I know that's not what a lot of people want to hear. So today we're going to talk about the holidays and is there a safe way to gather. And we've got an expert to help us with this. Dr. Daria Long is an emergency room physician and a best-selling author. She's going to give us some tips on how we can celebrate safely this holiday season. Dr. Long, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Sharon. It's my pleasure to be here.
Well, first of all, if you could tell us, what is the risk and why is it such a big deal this year to try and get together for the holidays?
So to talk about the risk, we just need to look to our neighbors to the north, Canada. They just had Canadian Thanksgiving mid-October. And actually, the problem is they've seen a big spike in COVID cases around 2 to 3 weeks after Canadian Thanksgiving. What we're seeing from the data is that it's these small family gatherings where everyone gathers together in the same house and shares a bathroom and they all eat together for a couple of days that are really fueling the spread of COVID now and potentially to come.
Wow. Okay. Well, I know that you're going to try to help us navigate this today. How can we have a safe gathering? Is it possible to gather safely and have a COVID-free holiday?
Yeah. So it's not possible to rubber stamp guaranteed COVID-free Thanksgiving, but it doesn't mean Thanksgiving is canceled, Sharon. I think that if we kind of take a multiple layered look at it, then there are ways that we can say, I'm going to decrease COVID walking in through my front door. And I'm also going to decrease the risk of COVID if it does come in spreading amongst my family. So let's get into some tips for that, shall we? The first one would be, so if you're saying looking at decreasing COVID coming in through my front door, first step is to say, well, how many people are coming to your party? We need to keep that smaller this year. It's not the very big Thanksgiving get-togethers of the past. Remember, Sharon, anyone who comes to your event, their pod is now your pod. So keep that in mind. And you don't want anybody who's symptomatic. That may seem totally obvious, but we're seeing a lot of outbreaks and people then found out, well, Uncle John had a runny nose and a cough, and he then 2 days later, after Thanksgiving, after the event, found out that he was COVID positive. A third tool there to reduce the risk of COVID walking into your front door effectively is testing. So to get an FDA authorized COVID test, like one by Everlywell, where you can actually collect it at home, mail it in, and you get your results in as little as 24 hours, that's a great option to reduce the risk of people bringing COVID to your event. Now, on the second hand, though, you say, well, since nothing is fail-safe 100%, you still have to do the other things to reduce COVID being transmitted amongst your guests. So things like masking. Everyone needs to wear a mask except when they are eating. You want to try to eat outdoors and have all your activities outdoors as much as possible because of better ventilation, and it allows people to still stay distance. All of those things, if you kind of do all of those different layers, you can significantly reduce your risk of spreading COVID amongst your family.
Now, I know that some people are saying, okay, we'll get together, we'll be outside, or if you're inside, have the windows open, that kind of thing. How about sharing food? I mean, should you like bring your own utensils, your own serving things? What can you do to mitigate the risk when you're actually eating?
It's not a bad idea. And sharing the food kind of has two things. One, you have these shared communal utensils that everybody's touching. So that's not a great thing. And the other is everybody gathering around the buffet to serve themselves. So a couple ways you can do it. You could say there are two or three family members who are going to wear a mask, wear a gloves, and serve everyone's plate so that everybody's not clustering up. Everybody's not touching the same utensils. That's one way. Another is you can say the immediate families that come, they will kind of use their utensil, kind of share that utensil for serving their food. Then they'll step aside and they'll eat kind of in one section. And then another immediate family will come through, serve themselves. And they'll also eat outdoors together, but about 12 feet apart from another immediate family. So you can see each other. You can still talk, but you're less likely to be spreading COVID. So you spread cheer, not COVID.
Okay. How about for the family members that some of them like, this is in my family. My father is like, COVID, no big deal. I'm not going to get it. Let's have regular Thanksgiving. My mother's like, no way. Stand, you know, on the other side of the room. What do you say to families that are sort of torn between how to go about having these holiday gatherings?
Sharon, this is so the norm right now. Thanksgiving is emotionally driven in general, let alone when everybody's arguing about COVID and politics and everything else. I would say one thing is to have those awkward conversations before the event. Have them when you are planning and saying, this is, and, you know, however the host is going to decide to do it. Say, this is how we're doing it. And if somebody doesn't agree or isn't going to abide by those, then maybe this isn't the year to have Thanksgiving together and you'll do it some other year. Have those discussions now before Aunt June is unpacking in your guest bedroom and telling you that she totally disagrees with everything you think when it comes to COVID. Have those discussions early. We can't force people. We can't, you know, people have different opinions, but you can say, this is how we will be doing it. If you disagree, then we would love to celebrate with you virtually.
How about for traveling? I know a lot of people travel, go across the country, go, you know, hours away to get together with family members. What advice do you have for people who are traveling to try to stay safe and have these safe gatherings?
Yeah, the best thing is to not travel long distances if you can avoid it. That's what most experts are saying. If travel is inevitable, then something private, like going via a car, is going to be safer than public transportation. But if you have to do public transportation, whether it's a plane or a bus or a train, then what I'm telling people is before you get to the airport or station, eat and drink, then put on your mask, put on your face shield, and wear it the entire way through the airport, through security, through the airplane ride, through getting your luggage. Don't take it off until you get to your destination. And another thing is, where are you staying? Because we've seen, people often don't think about this, but when we see spread, it's because people are all, these large groups of families staying all together in the same house, sharing bedrooms and bathrooms and kitchens for all these different meals. Instead, this year, see if you can rent, you know, small separate rentals so that you may be able to eat together outside, connect with each other, socialize, and then go home to your respective places where you are sleeping. That's also going to reduce your risk. And Sharon, if anybody questions it, you know, think you can tell them, use me as the bad guy. Use the Canadian experience as the bad guy. Say, we don't want to have to quarantine our kids so that they can't go back to school or that I can't go back to work after the event. There are plenty of situations that you can use as the reason that you have to follow these guidelines this year.
So people that decide, okay, we're going to be safe, we're not going to get together, how can they still connect and be together, you know, from a distance? And because I'm sure that that's obviously very important for people to have that mental connection still during the holidays.
Yes, that's the whole point of the holidays. So a couple different things. Of course, there's the big family Zoom calls you can do. Everybody's gotten used to those this year. You can also do things like helping each other. I know some people who say, you know, I'm going to prepare a pumpkin pie for a number of different relatives that I can't go see. We can't sit together at a table and break bread this year, but I'm going to take that my way of some doing something for them, go deliver it to them on the front porch, and then, you know, stand maybe 12 feet apart and sit and talk 12 feet apart, distance, masks. There are ways that we can connect. We don't have to be bumping elbows at the Thanksgiving table if we remember that the point of the holidays is to see our loved ones and to connect with them in whatever way that is safe and possible this year.
Well, it's certainly going to be a different looking holiday season, but these are some great tips, some great ideas on how people can gather safely or still celebrate together virtually during the upcoming holiday season. We've been speaking with Dr. Daria Long. She's an emergency room physician and best-selling author. And we thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Long.
Thank you, Sharon. And if anyone wants additional information on this FDA-authorized test, they can go to everlywell.com/COVID. It's quick and painless. Great way to get tested. Great tool in your toolkit this year.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. Thank you so much, Dr. Long.
Thanks. Take care, Sharon. Happy Thanksgiving.
And thank you, Sharon. Some excellent, excellent advice there as we enter the holidays in this COVID season. Hey, WBT's own Joe Gillespie hooked up with Jack Christine. He's the chief operating officer for the city's aviation department, which owns and operates Charlotte Douglas International Airport. Okay, you can do a little traveling during the holidays. Here's some great advice from Jack.
There are definitely people here.
Jack Christine, chief operating officer, Charlotte Douglas International Airport. Normally, at this time of year, we're at a news conference at the airport, and they're telling us about just how busy they're going to be over the holiday. And usually, they're expecting record-breaking crowds.
It definitely will not be what it's been the last few. But we're going to see numbers that are larger than what we've seen since the pandemic started. We're anticipating somewhere between 17,000 local originating passengers on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, leading up to Thursday being Thanksgiving. And then on Sunday, we'll see about 20,000 local and plane passengers. Those are the passengers that are starting or ending their trip here in Charlotte through that holiday week. From the total passenger perspective, though, we're still anticipating that we'll have somewhere about 30,000 people, 60,000 people total a day going through the building through the connections with American Airlines and the hub.
Christine says they're expecting about 60% of the traffic that they would encounter on a normal year.
We have all of our parking options available with the exception of business valet throughout the week. And we're not anticipating any type of major issues with parking, but you need to follow the directions, the signage and things to make sure that you're going to the right parking lot that's open at that particular time. And we'll get you parked and get you to the terminal so you can get on your flights.
It is going to be a different airport experience when you park your car or when someone drops you off, mask up.
Requiring facial coverings, and that's really not just in the terminal building. We really want folks wearing their mask from the time that they park their car until the time they get back in their car to go home. And that's for everyone's safety, especially their own. We are trying our best to provide opportunities to keep people separated. Social distancing is a big challenge for airports.
Inside the airport, you're going to need to go through security. And Kevin Frederick is the TSA Federal Security Director for Charlotte Douglas Airport. How will it be different?
It's going to look a lot different because right now we've got a lot of personal protective equipment used by the officers. If you go to the checkpoint, you will see that they're wearing surgical masks and surgical gloves, and in certain positions, they're wearing face shields. We've got plexiglass around all the travel document check stations. We've got plexiglass in front of the divestiture tables, and we're basically cleaning constantly. We've got the airport cleaning constantly, really deep cleaning at night, and as they can, depending on the passenger volume during the day. And our officers are doing the same thing. If it's a little bit of slow at the checkpoint, they'll take out their alcohol bottles and they'll start wiping tables and touch points down on all the machinery.
You'll keep your mask on going through security, except
at the travel document check at the beginning, they will ask the passenger to lift that mask down to verify the facial features.
How safe is flying?
I have my family flying. They have flown numerous times while this thing's going on, so I can say it's safe. If I didn't think it was, I wouldn't let them fly. And I mean, there were articles last week. You'll see a number of articles saying that right now it's safer to go on an airport and go on an airplane than it is to go to a local grocery store. And I think that's true because all the additional measures they've taken for cleanliness and social distancing, personal protective equipment, you name it.
Airport officials say allow plenty of time when coming to the airport, and they say expect there to be crowds at the airport that you may not be expecting. Kevin Frederick is the TSA Federal Security Director for Charlotte Douglas Airport.
It's going to look a lot different because right now we've got a lot of personal protective equipment used by the officers. If you go to the checkpoint, you will see that they're wearing surgical masks and surgical gloves, and in certain positions, they're wearing face shields. We've got plexiglass around all the travel document check stations.
You'll keep your mask on going through security, except
at the travel document check at the beginning, they will ask the passenger to lift that mask down to verify the facial features.
How safe is flying?
I have my family flying. They have flown numerous times while this thing's going on, so I can say it's safe.
Frederick urges travelers to get there early and wear a mask. Joe Gillespie, WBT News.
Welcome back to Carolina Focus. Carolina Focus is being aired on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, 107.9 The Link, and 102.5 610 Sports Radio WFNZ. It's also available as a podcast on WBT, along with Sharon Thorsland. I'm Ed Billick. Second half of the show, a real interesting piece of Teresa Payton, our cybersecurity expert. She spoke with Bo Thompson last week on the aftermath of the elections. Now, I don't want to get into politics right now, but there's a lot of things going on behind the scenes. Interesting discussion with Teresa. And then Sharon and I are going to talk the NBA draft and the star power that is coming to Charlotte with our Charlotte Hornets. All that in the second half, right here on Carolina Focus.
And on the WBT hotline, it's Teresa Payton, our cybersecurity expert. And those of you who thought that Election Day would end all of the emails about politics and pressure to vote for somebody one way or the other, it's not necessarily gone, Teresa. In fact, we're in kind of a limbo period here, wondering how some of these races are going to shake out and how President Trump is going to exit the White House should the results hold up. And yet the digital correspondence continues, much to the chagrin of some people out there.
No, you're right about that. And I mean, one of the interesting things is not only are we having to shut down misinformation campaigns, but people are a little surprised to find they're still getting political emails and text messages, and they're like, wait a minute, I thought this was going to be done.
Yeah, and it's not always from skewed in one direction. Now, you hear so much talk about President Trump's tweets and social media posts being censored in the days following the election, but there is this inundation that goes on both sides. I mean, you can find different examples in different forms of political entities trying to exert influence on, I mean, I say voters, people have already voted, but I guess the word now would be influence on political thinkers.
Yeah, I mean, this has been really interesting. So, for example, people are reporting not only are they getting sort of campaign asks for money, but they're getting things that seem a little threatening in their text messages now. And it wasn't that long ago before the election where we found out that Iran had sent emails posing as the Proud Boys threatening registered Democrats. And so now people are saying, well, I'm getting these robo-texts. They're not just asking for money, but it seems sort of threatening. And you don't have to put up with that. For starters, what you can actually do is file a complaint with the FCC. You can go to fcc.gov/complaints and put that there. You can also forward the text to 7726 or spam, and they'll actually look into it. So you don't need to put up with it. You can ignore it, but also report it.
Well, and in this case, like I said, it's not trying to influence the vote anymore, unless you happen to live in Georgia where there is a runoff election in two cases, or maybe a spot here and there across the country. But what really is going on here is the quest to control the narrative on both sides.
Yeah, they're really trying to change the citizen sentiment around the incoming administration, the outgoing administration, what types of websites you're visiting for your news and opinion pieces. It really crosses the line, and it'll be interesting to see as an investigation goes into these robotexts to find out who's behind it. Is it actual real Americans, or is it something that's being generated from overseas? It's still too early to know. But again, it's one of those things people might be concerned about, and the best thing to do is ignore the messaging and then report it to the FCC.
Teresa Payton, our cybersecurity expert with Fortalice Solutions here in town. You can follow her on Twitter at Tracker Payton. We'll continue the conversation coming up. Here's something interesting. We had the news on Monday about Pfizer and the vaccine candidate that is more than 90% effective. Almost immediately, news of that gave way to shares of Zoom, Pinterest, and advanced micro devices falling sharply, suggesting that the boom that you saw with companies that capitalized on quarantined people and the lack of the ability to assemble in person, now all of a sudden that pendulum may swing the other way pretty rapidly.
And it makes you wonder, are there going to be some elements that became very popular during the pandemic that will be around to stay, even though we're allowed out of our homes and to be together with people again? So, for example, they really didn't talk about what does that mean for TikTok? And there's a lot still unsaid about TikTok and its future status, given the national security concerns from the current administration. But it'll be interesting to see what this does mean for the future of a lot of the technology platforms, Zoom being one of them, but certainly the cloud services providers, and, you know, all the different apps that became so incredibly popular during the pandemic. The question is do they stay popular after the vaccine is readily available?
Well, we saw the Zoom boom with the pandemic. And now, guess who gets the bump after the election? You and I have talked about this app in particular in recent weeks, but by several different metrics, the most popular app post-election is Parler.
Isn't this fascinating? Because you and I talked about this before, where you know, Twitter tended to be where people congregated to share news and share opinions, and Parler was definitely getting some play throughout the political campaign cycle. But you basically, you know, post-election, had a lot of people feel like there were different voices that were being fact-checked and marked as misinformation. And they decided that it seemed to be a little bit more free to say what you want over on Parler. And it was fascinating to see from November 3rd to November 8th, they had almost 1 million people or devices install the app. So they've now reached 3.6 million installs. That's still not the size of Twitter, but really interesting development. And it'll be interesting to see what that means for Twitter's ongoing policies, if they're going to change, if they're going to lighten back up again, or if they're just going to, you know, kind of stay the course, and what that's going to mean to their followership, with Parler being another option.
Well, and Parler, can Parler withstand the influx of new users? A lot of times when you have fledgling companies trying to capitalize on an exodus from a well-known entity, that initial hit proves to be too much.
It's been around for 2 years. So Twitter has been around a lot longer. And you're right about that. That whole idea, they actually, in the fall, they said that they were going to offer uncensored real-time election coverage. And so, you know, be careful what you wish for, because, you know, in sort of that free-for-all, as we know, a lot of these older social media companies had to learn the hard way that, you know, oftentimes, unfortunately, you get people who say things that are really, it's not about misinformation and freedom of speech, but really inappropriate. Sometimes borderline, you know, threatening, where it sounds like there could be a physical security issue. So it's going to be really interesting to see kind of what their growing pains are going to be and what their strategy is going to be to deal with those growing pains. But wow, pretty incredible to see all these people downloading Parler. And we'll just have to see in the coming months how the activity goes on that. Right.
Well, and I can think of several people that I know that are big time conservatives that have said, OK, I'm going to Parler. I hear so much talk about it. But I've heard instances where people say it's not exactly as user friendly as some of these other apps are. So if they're going to if Parler is going to capitalize, they're going to have to make sure that everybody that they're targeting can make use of that app the way that these people are used to using other apps. That's it's business and it's digital business. But here comes another boom, I think.
Because I have to tell you, I remember in the early days of Twitter, it was so simple and easy to use. I mean, it was a no-brainer. And then the question is, with some of these newer apps like Parler, if it doesn't have the same interface, if it's not as intuitive, you know, will people just sort of say, okay, well, this was interesting for a little bit, but I'm going to go back to where everybody else is. So, I think the next 90 days is going to be critical and pivotal to Parler's ongoing relevance and longevity. So hopefully they were ready for the deluge.
Yes, that's the key to business, right? Teresa Payton, our cybersecurity expert. Follow her on Twitter, @TrackerPayton. Always a great conversation. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for having me on, Bo. Be safe out there, and I hope you have a great rest of the week.
Okay, thank you, Bo. Thank you, Teresa. Now let's move on to some lighthearted, positive, good-feeling things for our city of Charlotte, North Carolina. With the third pick in the 2020 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select LaMelo Ball. Now, who is he and what is he? He is an outstanding young man, gifted with a lot of athletic ability. He brings star power to our town. He's what this team needs. He's what this city needs. So first, let's listen to Mitch Kupchak, general manager of the Hornets, and then let's listen to LaMelo himself. And then Jerry V got together with Bo Thompson. Jerry V, a longtime Hornets play-by-play announcer back in the early days, and an NBA expert, shares his thoughts. And then Sharon and I'll wrap it up right here on Carolina Focus.
Obviously, by now, you know, we drafted LaMelo Ball at the third pick. And there may not have been a lot of excitement, you know, as to who the top three picks were. Quite frankly, you know, there were more than three players we considered with the third pick. Having said that, going into the draft this evening, we did not know who would go first, second, or third. We're happy, very happy, you know, that LaMelo Ball was there when we drafted number three. He's a very young, talented player who plays the kind of pace that we like to play. He has a flair to his game that, you know, maybe has some entertainment to it, more so than some other players. You know, having said that, that's not why we drafted him. We drafted him because of his size, his length, you know, the way he can handle the ball, the way he pushes the ball. Obviously, at 19 years old, we feel there's a lot of upside there. So we're very excited. Now, you know, he is 19, and he's going to come onto a team where there are, you know, players who have NBA experience, and we're hopeful, you know, that he works hard and, you know, earns, you know, any minutes that he gets this year. And if he does that, and if he loves the game as much as we think he loves the game, we feel he has a chance to be a heck of a player in this league for a long time.
We'll go first question, Rick Bunnell.
Hey, Mitch, in the past, I know that you have been uncomfortable at times with using the word point guard. I've heard you use the term ball handling guard, like you don't like to over specify things. The fact that you have now LaMelo and Devontae and Terry, how do you envision those three guys' skills blending together?
Rick, I don't think it'll be a problem. First of all, you know, LaMelo, you know, is not going to be given minutes, you know, because he was drafted number three. There are going to be expectations, and I think the kid's going to work hard, and I think he'll earn some minutes. But whatever he gets, you know, he'll have to earn. And Devontae and Terry, I'm sure they will welcome him as a teammate, but they want to play, and, you know, they're going to compete. So whatever he gets, you know, he will earn. Looking at today's game, you know, there's a strong argument that the way we played this game 30 years ago is not the way we play this game today. And you could literally have, you know, three ball handling guards, you know, and LaMelo at 6'6", you could look at him as a point wing, perhaps, you know, who knows how it's going to play out. So, you know, once again, I don't think there'll be any problem. You know, you might look out on the court next year and see five players, you know, under 6'7" on the court at the same time. So, you know, there's no set you know, rules about who will play and who won't play and how big the players have to be and what positions they play. You know, clearly there's been a lot made the last year or two about positionless basketball in the NBA. So, you know, he's a piece that we're excited about having. And, you know, once again, you know, when he gets here, he's going to work. And, you know, that usually takes care of everything. If each player on this team works as hard as they can, that takes care of everything.
And now his first press conference as a Charlotte Hornet. Here's LaMelo Ball.
Could you sort of talk about, considering your combination of skills and size, how you think you fit into a basketball team in general that way?
I feel like I fit anywhere real good, and definitely the point forward, I feel like it could work because it's definitely positionless basketball now. You can just get it and go. So
he said that the thing they were most excited about is your ability to push it because it's not because you're good in transition the way that they described.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I love transition. I would love that the team would get in transition, and I feel like it's going to be fun this year.
The next question will be Matt from Hornets.com.
Hi, LaMelo. Congratulations on becoming part of the Charlotte Hornets. First off, can you just talk to me about how excited you are to play with a young core of guys and Miles Bridges, PJ Washington, Devontae, group of guys?
Yeah, I'm definitely excited. I've been seeing them ever since I was young, for real. Miles at Michigan State and stuff, and Huntington Beach and all that. And then PJ, I played him when he was at Finley and stuff. It's going to be exciting. I mean, two high flyers can get out and go. And we got a young team, so I mean, yeah, I feel like it's going to be nice.
Do you feel like this team really kind of fits your style of play of wanting to get up and down the court quite a bit?
Yeah, definitely. I love getting up and down. So if that's the play style, that definitely fits.
The next question will be JB Ricks.
Hey, LaMelo. JB Ricks here from Spectrum News One in North Carolina. Congratulations on being drafted by the Charlotte Hornets. I just have a curious question, you know, with a lot of the mock drafts that were coming out, coming into the night, you were projected to go number one overall. Was there any surprise at all that you fell to number three? And what are your thoughts that you fell to an organization like the Charlotte Hornets?
I definitely feel great falling into with them, but the way of falling down, and I never looked at it like that because, like I say, whatever happens, happens, and I feel like it's God's plan. So wherever he wanted to put me, that's where he put me, and I feel like he's going to let me blossom there.
And my follow-up to that is you'll be playing for Michael Jordan, who is obviously considered the GOAT, greatest of all time when it comes to the sport of basketball. Your immediate thoughts about playing for him as your owner?
Man, straight blessing, for real. I don't even have enough words to say. I mean, I'm just blessed right now, for real.
All right, thank you. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Next question will be from Dan Wolke.
Hey, LaMelo. Dan Wolke with the LA Times again. What's it like? You said yesterday that, you know, yesterday was just another day for you. What's it like to be in this moment today to finally hear your name called? And then I guess, how excited are you to be an NBA player here in, what, 2 weeks to get into camp and get going?
Definitely excited. I'm just letting it all hit me right now. But like I said, I'm ready to play. So, yeah, I'm definitely ready to come and everything and just ready to lace them up for real.
What was the scene like at the
S to life in the NBA, the spotlight, all of those things? And how do you feel like your previous experiences have you prepared you for that?
Well, you just answered it right there. I mean, I feel like these previous experiences made me who I am today. So it's quite easy for real if I'm just talking to you. It doesn't really
Last question will be from Terrell Thomas.
Do you feel like you're going to step into that role? And do you think you can fill the arena in Charlotte now?
Oh, yeah, I mean, definitely. I just go out there and play basketball. I mean, I feel like I was born to do this. So that's really my answer right there.
And I might add, episode 7 of the Century Podcast Series features my next guest. The V-Man, the great Jerry V, joins me on this Thursday morning. And who else am I going to talk to the morning after the NBA draft? V-Man, how are you?
Good morning, Bo. Always a pleasure. Yes. Always a pleasure. By the way, I got a notice from several bookstores around the country. They're out of that podcast. You might want to replenish their shelves.
We got to restock. They especially want episode number 7, by the way.
Exactly, number 7.
That was a lot of fun having you in here for that. And if people haven't or want to take a deep dive into the V world as it was on WBT and even beyond what you've been doing since all those years, we had fun that day. But I want to talk to you about what happened last night.
right? Because for so many years, so many people think of you and they think of the NBA and this radio station and the Charlotte Hornets, really, for the first time in a long time, at least on paper, V, have some star power to talk about with LaMelo Ball. What do you think?
Potentially, I like what I see. And I looked at a lot of video last night. I was like the old coaching days. Potentially, he's blessed. Here's what you get. Open floor ball handler, terrific vision, the size at 6'7", and he can pass the ball with either hand, and he can do it off the move. He can throw in little tiny windows or big windows. So he's a precision-type passer. He's got a little flash to him, which makes it fun to watch. You like all that part about his game. Who's ever the wing runners and your rim runners in the open floor, they're going to be on the tail end of some nice catches. And where he places the ball, if he was a quarterback, he puts it where you can score it. In other words, he keeps a good pass as a good pass. He doesn't throw the bad pass that throw the shooters off balance. I don't like that he doesn't defend, and I don't like that he cannot legitimately shoot the ball. And my personal philosophy has always been, if you have a non-shooter on the floor, it sets you back. It can set you back. Now, those are correctable errors, although the jump shot, it needs a doctor's visit.
Well, when you looked at the mock drafts, and I'm sure you looked at a lot of them, there were some drafts that had LaMelo Ball going number one. There were some that had him going two or three. Anthony Edwards goes one. James Wiseman goes number two. So you could argue here, based on some of these mock drafts, that the Hornets got the best pick in the entire draft. We won't know for a few years, but I'm curious. Is this who you would have picked if you had the
If I had a chance, I would have taken Wiseman because of the size. He's a rim runner. The Hornets need a big to can help open up the floor. But remember, in the draft, a lot of times in the draft, this particular draft, who was the player, you ask people, that was a blow-your-mind, legitimate, can't-miss guy? So this draft was on potential, and that's an art form. How you project potential and add a talent to your roster, your ability to project that potential. On potential, he's a gifted player with weaknesses, and you can be gifted and have weaknesses, and that is the jump shooting and the defense. Now, you know, who's going to be on his wing side, and, you know, you're going to move Graham and Rozier off the ball, that's fine. Is he going to buy into, as he develops and matures, the defensive night in and night out dedication that's required? And what kind? I don't understand how there's some guys that are in the draft that were the sons of gifted fathers that knew how to play the game, don't have a legitimate jump shot. That staggers me. But potentially, this is a gifted player who can be a good, solid player who has the skills of a point guard to play, make, and pass. But can he defend and can he score? Now, is he legitimate number one pick in this particular draft? Depends on your need. I would have gone with Wiseman one if available, and Melo at number two. But then again, it's based on your roster needs.
So what about the baggage? Baggage may be the wrong word, but you said wingside a few minutes ago. That's on the court. There's also the off-the-court wingman, wingside person, and that is his father. We know how this is all played out with Lonzo Ball and LaVar Ball. Do you think? What do you think about that aspect of this?
Well, it is what it is. We know what he's all about. There's no mystery there. That'll be managed by the coaching staff.
Yeah.
Everybody that you sign and everything that we do, there's going to come with a little bit of baggage. How big that baggage is going to be? How many bags are you allowed to carry on now?
That's true. And, you know, I was talking to somebody earlier who said that Lonzo sort of, you know, he's the oldest, and Lonzo went through this with his dad, and Lonzo has, you know, sort of escaped the shadow of his dad now that he's established his career a bit, and so I think LaMelo probably benefits from not being the first to go through this.
Yeah, he's not the first. And remember, he's had an interesting journey.
Yeah.
He went to Lithuania, then he went to Australia, only played 12 games in Australia, and he got some early fame. I like to say that the smoke of the vapor of the success smoke has been blown in his face often at a young age. How will he make that transition? And I think with this coaching staff, there'll be good mentors there for him. And who's going to be the guy in the locker room and on this roster that can help him? That's why you want to sprinkle in a little maturity on your rosters. But it's an intriguing pick. The Hornets have so many areas, Bo, that they need to lift. the upcoming, the next couple of years as far as scoring and their shooting and, you know, their offensive efficiency was near the basement. Their defensive efficiency needs work.
Yeah.
So you have a guy that's minus in those two categories. They are looking to redesign and improve, and they're young. They always play with enthusiasm. I like him on his potential. I'm uncomfortable in the early stages of his game, defense, and scoring. Are they correctable? It's going to depend on his work capacity and dedication in the two. But when you look at him on video, goal,
mm-hmm.
you go, ah, nice player. I like what he does offensively. And then turn away and don't look at some of the other highlights for now.
Well, a wise man once told me, you got to earn your bones, right?
That's the one right there. In fact, I have that tattooed on my arm.
That's right. So we'll see if he can do that. Hey, V-Man.
He felt it wrong when he put it on.
Good to talk to you, my friend.
Always a pleasure, both. Stay well and be safe. The same to your audience. Thank you very much.
Same to you. The V-Man, Jerry Valancourt. Jerry V here on WBT.
Well, Sharon Thorsland joins us here on Carolina Focus and sharing some great interviews done by you earlier in the show. But what I want to pick your brain is LaMelo Ball. I mean, we've heard about his dad. We've heard about his family. Is he the right pick? I mean, some people thought he'd go number one in the draft. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I guess it depends on who you talk to. I know Scott Fowler wrote an interesting opinion article this week about why he thought LaMelo was not the right fit for the Hornets. But you heard in that press conference there by Mitch Kupchak, they're real high on him. Coach James Borrego, same way, they really like him because he is a fast-paced player. He can really push the pace, push the ball. He's a playmaker. He definitely has his issues. And talking with Coach Borrego, he says that, you know, they feel like they can fix whatever those issues are, mainly his jump shot. He has sort of a weird delivery, and he's not a real good three-point shooter. They feel like they can develop that and fix that, and that he gives them the exact type of player they want to run. They want to have a fast-paced offense, and they feel like he fits it. And he brings sort of that wow factor that the Hornets really have not had for years and years and years. This is a guy that, even if you're not a big sports fan, you probably heard of LaMelo Ball because of his crazy family and his wackadoodle dad and everything. So he brings a little bit of that pizzazz, a little bit of that star power, a little bit of that flash to the Hornets, and that's frankly something that they've needed for several years now. They haven't had a really big star player. You know, Kemba Walker was the guy that everybody loved around here. He's gone now to Boston, so I think they're hoping that LaMelo also fills that star void as well that the Hornets have been lacking.
You know what I like, and I think I heard Jay Billis say this yesterday, he puts the ball, when he passes, he puts the ball right where the player expects the ball to come to his hands, which then makes him even a better player to execute the rest of the play. I thought that was pretty cool to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, the pundits have, I mean, there's a reason that he was ranked, you know, in the top five of this draft. There's a reason people thought he might go number one, you know, so he's definitely got a lot of potential, has a lot of raw talent. And he's also, Coach Borrego was mentioning one thing which I thought was interesting, is that he's already been a pro. He's not coming in here cold out of college as a 19-year-old. He's already been around the world playing basketball with, you know, 30 and 35-year-old men. So he's been in a sort of a different world than most of these young kids are that come out of college or out of, you know, high school or wherever they come. These young kids, these one-and-doneers, he's a little different than that because he's been really, I mean, he's been brought up in a basketball world and traveling around with his dad and his brothers. And then, you know, he's been in Latvia or Lithuania or somewhere and, you know, playing in Australia. And so he's already been in the pros. So he's already probably a lot more mature in that sense than some players, as well as just having the experience of playing with professionals already. So this is not going to be sort of a whole new world for him coming into the Hornets.
Well, big congratulations go out to the Charlotte Hornets, and it's exciting times for the NBA in our city going forward. Hey, with the last couple of minutes we have here, hey, Thanksgiving week, you celebrating at home, you're cooking, you're doing a dinner. What's your plans?
It's going to be an odd Thanksgiving, I think, for a lot of people, myself included. We normally travel to my parents' house up in the mountains and have a big family get together. We're not doing that this year. We're paying attention to these CDC guidelines that tell you to keep things small. So we're going up. We have a little place on the lake, up on Moss Lake. We're headed up there, and I am, for the first time in my entire life, going to attempt to cook a turkey. So,
oh, that's great. Take pictures. I want to hear all about it.
Yeah, I'm missing the old days of WBT when we used to get the the fried turkey. We would have somebody come in the parking lot and make a big old fried turkey. That was the best thing I ever ate. So one of these days I'll attempt a fried turkey. But for this go-around, we're just going to stick it in the oven.
So we give thanks on Thursday, then we start the holiday season. You got some interesting stories and storylines coming up between now and Christmas, don't we?
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff still going on in the Charlotte area. I know that the coronavirus pandemic has certainly changed the look of a lot of things, but we're going to be talking to some folks about some of these really neat events, including the light show up at the Speedway. They're also doing a lot of drive-in holiday movies. There are going to be a lot of neat events and things that people can go do and see all throughout the holiday season. So we're going to be profiling a lot of those different events and things coming up on the show next week. So you want to make sure and tune in and hear all the fun things you can still do this holiday season with your family.
Right here on Carolina Focus. Sharon, have a wonderful Thanksgiving, you and your family, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds great, Ed. You do the same.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor.
We're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Monday, it's the CBS original comedy, The Neighborhood.
I need at least a month to prepare for a debate, not 6 hours.
Actually, it's 4 hours.
Now my watch is broken, too.
With Cedric the Entertainer, Max Greenfield, and guest star Wayne Brady.
You gotta fund the schools or graduate fools.
I stole all my lines.
Look, don't worry, I got a plan.
Okay, well, what is it?
Okay, so I don't have a plan.
A new episode of The Neighborhood.
You're gonna have to give them a show.
Monday, 8, 7 central on CBS.